Breaking news, Secretary of State Pompeo announces withdrawal of the United States from a nuclear treaty with Russia.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Russia has jeopardized the United States security interests, and we can no longer be restricted by the treaty while Russia shamelessly violates it.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
If Russia does not return to full and verifiable compliance with the treaty within this six-month period by verifiably destroying its INF-violating missiles, their launchers, and associated equipment, the treaty will terminate.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. And breaking news this morning, the United States has withdrawn from a nuclear pact with Russia. This is a nuclear agreement, a weapons agreement that dates back to 1987, towards the end of the Cold War and the dissolution of the USSR, but is a treaty that has been in dispute for a number of years. It goes back to the Obama administration, though the Obama administration was ultimately unwilling to take Russia to task on its violations, repeated violations of this treaty, and specifically goes to a missile system and a missile that Russia has, a nuclear missile, as the treaty was called, Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. It was put in place ultimately to prevent the United States and Russia from being able to fire nuclear weapons at each other. So not having a nuclear capable weapon that Russia could then fire at the United States. But we've seen through the continued buildup of Russian arms is that they have missiles that violate the treaty. They've been notified by the United States that we believe that they violate the treaty. They've had time to rectify it. They still have time to rectify it if it's important to them. But it also goes to a larger fundamental issue about U.S. foreign policy. I want to bring in right in our military analyst, Skip Ash, as well. And Skip, it goes to a U.S. foreign policy that is also trying to back up our neighbors more in Europe, because ultimately this treaty really didn't protect them. It was only between the U.S. and Russia. And so there's multiple reasons why the United States, under the Trump administration, has made the decision that past administrations complained about but were unwilling to actually do.
Well, we have a situation. This treaty dealt with weapons that were fired within a range of 500 kilometers to 5,500 kilometers. So these would be missiles that would be fired from the former Soviet Union or today's Russia, and they would not reach the United States. They would reach U.S. forces in Europe, and they would also reach our NATO allies. So by getting rid of an entire category of weapons, what we did in the late 80s was to make Europe safer from both conventional and nuclear attack by means of these missiles. So this is a significant violation on the Russians' part and a significant response on the U.S. part to bring further protection to our NATO allies.
And they're doubling down. Russia, we've identified the specific missile in question. It's called the Novatar 9M729 missile, which Russia's arguing is compliant. This has been a 30-year-old treaty, but again, this is not the Trump administration, Skip, saying for the first time ever that this violates the treaty. This dates back to the Obama administration, but ultimately they were unwilling to start the withdrawal process.
Absolutely. In 2014, during the Obama administration, is when the first warning went out from the State Department saying that the Russians were in noncompliance, so they were developing a system that violated the treaty. So this is not a Trump initiative or a Trump discovery, but this is a Trump action to deal with it.
And again, I think it's flexing our foreign policy muscles. It's the Trump administration flexing America's muscles at the world stage, and this directly with Russia, but also sending a signal to our NATO allies that we want to do what is in our power to keep them safe from what has been a newly more aggressive Russia under Vladimir Putin. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. When we come back from the break, we'll head to Washington, D.C., check in with Than Bennett on Washington's reaction to this announcement of the withdrawal from a treaty, a nuclear arms treaty. Folks, I mean, this is a big deal, folks. We'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now, other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledged to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
The treaty dates back to 1987, in the days between the U.S. and the USSR. Former USSR, the Cold War, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. The U.S. has today announced through Secretary of State Pompeo, President Trump has put out a statement as well, that it is withdrawing from this treaty. That starts a six-month clock. Russia can either comply or the treaty will then be dissolved. Let me first go to Skip Ash, just so we understand what the intent of this treaty initially was to do. I mean, it's been in place since 1987. There have been issues that have arisen in the last 5 and 6 years under the Obama administration that put Russia on notice for violations, but the Obama administration ultimately did not take the decision to withdraw or begin the withdrawal process from the treaty. Let's go to Skip Ash right away. And Skip, to tell people, what was the initial intent of this 1987 nuclear treaty?
Well, we have to keep in mind that prior to the treaty was when the Reagan administration was proposing the Star Wars and everything else. We began to expand our military capability to the point that we were bankrupting the Russians. And the Russians realized that if they didn't come to a treaty to limit certain things, that they would not be able to compete at all. And the United States would become so overwhelming militarily that the Russians would fade into insignificance. So what happened was they came to the table, and what we argued was, well, let's look at the weapons that are the least capable strategically, and so we can keep the strategic balance, but let's then cut down the intermediate balance. And so there was an agreement to get rid of all intermediate range ballistic and nuclear weapons and cruise missiles. Again, the range was from 500 to 5,500 kilometers. Those were primarily targeted at Europe from Russian soil. They did not reach the United States, and in no way limited the Soviets from continuing to have their intercontinental ballistic missiles. So the idea was, let's remove as an entire category of weapons, and that was agreed to, and for a number of years that was kept, and then the Russians have begun to cheat.
And now the U.S. has specifically singled out what that weapon is that they believe is, the United States believes is a violation of the treaty, the Novatar N9-729 missile. Russia's disputing this. Let's take a listen. This is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo this morning announcing the withdrawal.
The agreements to which we enter must serve American interests, and countries must be held accountable when they break the rules. For years, Russia has violated the terms of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty without remorse. To this day, Russia remains in material breach of its treaty obligations not to produce, possess, or flight test a ground-launched intermediate-range cruise missile system with a range between 500 and 5,500 kilometers.
So again, that is, as we've discussed, that was what the treaty is, what Russia has been violating. Let me go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Than, we talked about during the break, but just to get the initial reaction from Capitol Hill, members of Congress, on this decision by the Trump administration to begin the withdrawal from this treaty with Russia. What is the initial reaction from Washington?
Yeah, I think the strongest initial reaction, Jordan, has been from Senator Lindsey Graham, who said he completely supports the Trump administration decision to withdraw from the treaty due to Russian noncompliance. Went on to say that he believes Russia's not been in compliance for a number of years, but previous administrations refused to do anything about it, said that it's a bad deal for America. But Jordan, I will predict to you that as the day goes along, I think we'll see an increasingly partisan reaction. And I look for, the reason I believe that is if you look for guidance to other foreign policy moves that this president has made, and I would just say it's directly consistent with the way he campaigned, that he was going to handle foreign policy based on it couldn't be one sided. It had to be a reciprocal response from whoever we're making a deal with. So you think about trade, the negotiations he's having with China. No longer is the United States going to be the only one at the table. You think about immigration and Latin America. No longer is the United States going to bear the entire brunt of those agreements. And I think the same is true on treaties. While previous administrations have looked at deals like this one, treaties like this one, and have known, Jordan, that the other party, in this case Russia, has not been in compliance, they have not been willing to act. This president, consistent with how he campaigned on foreign policy, will act. But the reaction from Washington, D.C., I will almost guarantee you that there will be opposition to this as the day goes along from people. But it's going to be predictable, Jordan. It's going to be people who are going to oppose it because of the president that's announcing it, not because of the substance that underlies it.
Yeah, we're already starting to see another candidate has entered the race. Not surprisingly, Cory Booker, another member of Congress, Than. So you've got Kamala Harris. Elizabeth Warren already announced. Now Cory Booker is announced. Yep. These are just U.S. senators who are making the run. So you expect that those who are going to be, again, taking the leap of, say, they want to be the candidate to run against President Trump in 2020, that they will come up with a reason to oppose this move?
Yes, I do. And let me give you a very clear indication that Cory Booker specifically, I think, will be on the other side of this deal. Just this week, Jordan, he flip-flopped on a major issue in which before now he had been out of step with, I would say the radical left base. And that is this issue that we've been so involved with, the BDS issue. He had been a fairly vocal critic of the BDS movement and said that he wanted to act to combat it. But there was an opportunity on the floor of the Senate this week to vote for cloture on a bill that would allow some states some latitude to sanction players that were engaged in the BDS movement. Jordan, Senator Booker flip-flopped on that issue this week, and I don't think you can say that move was not related to his decision to run for president of the United States. My guess will be, I haven't seen a statement from him, but my guess would be that he will not be willing to back the president on this, really, no matter what he thinks about the substance. I think the fact that he's running for the nomination will mean he'll come out opposed to this.
All right, folks, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Sam is calling from Oklahoma on line one. Sam, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Morning. My name is Sam. I'm calling from Oklahoma City, and I've been listening to your show. Here's my question. Do you think that the United States is withdrawing from this deal in part because of the support that Russia and China are giving to Venezuela at this moment?
Well, I mean, certainly there could be a number of reasons why. I'll go to Skip Ash. Skip, initially, listen, the Obama administration had issue with this and notified Russia officially through the State Department that they believed that they were in violation. They ultimately did not make the decision of the Obama administration to withdraw or begin the withdrawal process. So it's not something, this is not self-created by the Trump administration to start an issue with Russia over a nuclear treaty. It was something already pending at the U.S. State Department, where career officials had issues, believe that Russia has been in violation for a number of years. We have seen the reports about Russia and Venezuela, the gold. We know that Venezuela is selling off to Russia. They have photos of the aircraft leaving to kind of give an influx to the Maduro government there. We've also seen statements, though, from Russia saying, too far away, not enough of our interest to put military there. So I think, again, there may be multiple reasons why today is the day, but ultimately, Skip, it appeared this was something on path even in the previous administration.
Absolutely. The Russians are challenging the United States in many different areas to include Venezuela, but I think that it's in our self-interest and with our defensive alliances in Europe primarily that has triggered this, and the fact that the United States does not want to put our forces at a disadvantage. Remember, these missiles that are being tested not only will reach Europe, where we have forces stationed, but we also have forces in the Middle East, and they could also be used against our forces in the Middle East. So these are dangerous weapons against U.S. forces wherever we have stationed in the region, and therefore we have an independent reason for going after them, having nothing to do with Venezuela.
All right. So, I mean, again, there are U.S. interests at stake here. This was, again, a treaty between the U.S. and Russia, specifically those two, and it dates back to the time of the Soviet Union. But I want to underscore it too, just so that it's clear, if this becomes, as Stan predicts, a partisan issue throughout the day, that the Obama administration's State Department had already notified Russia that they believe they're in violation. This is not something self-created by the Trump administration. Not saying that if they did find out under the Trump administration that this was an issue, that you wouldn't want to take this kind of action. But I think it cuts through that partisan narrative immediately when you realize that, like other foreign policy decisions, we've seen red lines drawn by the Obama administration that weren't followed up on. And what we've seen, the difference is the words are followed up on by the Trump administration. Than it may be a shock to Washington, D.C., but we now have a president and administration on the foreign policy stage which says, if you do X, we will do Z. I mean, it goes right to the point, and there's not the why in between that takes years.
Yeah, we've got a town, Jordan, that's not used to that. I mean, they're used to politicians delivering lots of promises and then coming to town and actually, you know, then having a conversation about what to do. We haven't had a president, especially in the foreign policy space, that has operated that way. And honestly, Jordan, that's why I brought forward the comparisons with trade and with immigration. I think those two issues have been very disruptive to this town as well, because you've got a president who's actually trying to govern as he campaigned. And by the way, some of the biggest reasons the American people voted for him, and they wanted him, Jordan, to implement these policies, and now he's doing it. Doesn't always sit well in this town, though.
All right, folks, when we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We have a reaction from NATO as well. We will get to that. We come back from this break. 1-800-684-3110. Your reaction to the U.S. withdrawal of a nuclear treaty with Russia. 1-800-684-3110. Be right back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. The United States has announced this morning through Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that we are beginning the withdrawal from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty signed between the U.S. and what was the Soviet Union, now Russia, in 1987. I do want to explain one more time for people just so they understand what this treaty was, what the U.S. is withdrawing from. And I'll do that by going right to Skip Ash. Skip is a military analyst and a legal expert as well. Explain to people what this treaty, the purpose of it in 1987, why it was signed between the U.S. and Russia.
In the 1987-88 timeframe, we were just at the end of the period where the Reagan administration was putting a lot of pressure on the Soviet government by more defense spending, putting different types of missiles into Europe. And what that was doing, that was stressing the economy in the Soviet Union to the point that they could not afford to be in an arms race with us. So that moved them to the table to make some concessions. And what happened was this treaty was the result. And this treaty did away with an entire category of weapons within the 500 to 5,500 kilometer range, both ballistic and cruise missiles. And what that did, it was that created a situation where it made it much more difficult for NATO to attack the Russians or for the Russians to attack NATO. And therefore, it sort of was a big step in the right direction for peace on the European Eurasian continents. At the same time, it did not do away with the intercontinental ballistic missiles, so the Russians could feel like they could defend themselves against the United States, and the United States, likewise, could defend themselves from Soviet missiles. So what happened was this was a treaty that initially was working quite well, but the Russians had thus begun to treat, and that's been our experience with most of these treaties. That's why you have to verify these treaties and keep on top of them.
All right, and under the Obama administration, the warning was sent out to Russia. Ultimately, the Obama administration did not act, but the Trump administration has decided today. It's getting support from Senator Lindsey Graham, also support from NATO. This is the NATO statement that was put out. The United States is taking this action in response to the significant risk to Euro-Atlantic security posed by Russia's covert testing, production, and fielding of 9M729 ground launch cruise missile system. Allies fully support this action. So NATO is supporting this action as well. Let me go to the phones, and then I want to explain some of that NATO statement as well. Jerry's called in from Rhode Island on line 3. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Good afternoon, team. About the only person that can really say a comment is someone who's a military historian and understands going back, like Colonel Smith just did. About the only person I can think of would be like Jack Reed, who's been around for 20 years and a West Point grad. And you just said something interesting that Obama sent a warning. Any of these people speaking out now, were they around during the Obama warning? Did they speak out then?
Of course not. I'm sure they've been very aggressive. They've wanted the U.S., at least on the left, they think that the U.S. supposedly has not been tough enough on Russia. But now when the Trump administration takes actions like withdrawing from a nuclear treaty, then we are expecting the reaction in Washington, D.C. to be very partisan.
Yeah, Jordan, the opposition is going to be based on which president is making this proclamation. And I think you can fairly define it this way. I think opponents will come out and use lines like this will lead to the proliferation of dangerous weapons. Jordan, never mind the fact that the Obama administration found that proliferation was already happening just on one side. So Russia was doing it without having to worry about being countered from the United States or other strong allies in the world. Here's what I would say. I think the sound that you just played from NATO is so important in this calculation, because they're the ones that are within range of some of the weapons that we're talking about. And Colonel Ash, I agree with the caller. He can talk about this with more authority than I can. But I think from a U.S. foreign policy perspective, what we are saying is, if you threaten our allies, even if we're not talking about weapons that can reach the United States, if you threaten our allies, we are going to treat that as a threat to the United States. And no longer are we going to allow you to build up and proliferate these weapons with us just looking the other way. So I think the statement from NATO, Jordan, is very key in this. And it's a strong message to our NATO allies that we've got your back.
All right. We are going to take your phone calls as well, 1-800-684-3110. But I do want to go to Skip Ashton. Skip, you think ultimately NATO, they do support this idea of beginning the withdrawal process, but they don't want to see this. They want to see Russia respond. They don't want to see the treaty actually disappear.
Absolutely. I think they support, they see the need why the president acted, but they would like this to be, rather than actually do away with the treaty, they would like this to become a form of pressure on the Russians to say, okay, we got caught. Okay, we agree to abide by the treaty. We will destroy these weapons, that type of thing, because the implications of this for the Europeans are increased defense spending, and we've had enough trouble trying to get them to meet their minimum obligations already. This may increase the need for more defense spending on their part. So although they see the need, they're hoping that the Russians will come to the table and will back off, and therefore there'll be no need for that increased defense spending.
All right, let's go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Leslie is calling in from Nevada on line one. Leslie, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I have a two-part question, okay, statement regarding NATO and what the president is doing. 100% behind him. Support him 100%. Somebody needs to take a stand and let it be us. My question really is, and I can't help but wonder, how much of the hysteria and the division and all of the strife that's going on, but we only see it in the public, the media, you know, politicians, even Hollywood getting involved. But the people of the country, that's what matters. And how much of it, of the people feel like opposed to the president, or is it just the people in the public eye that are really opposing the president?
I think that the polls are about accurate, because a lot of this is where you get your info from. But I think we're in a pretty divided country. The midterm elections showed that, Than. I mean, you can't argue with the facts of the election outcomes. When it came to the House of Representatives, the Democrats took the majority back. They did that again, those are House seats. So how that would play out in a presidential election is different, and they weren't able. The Senate map was not real favorable to them in that last cycle, but we definitely live in what seems to be a more and more divided country and more partisan country. And I don't think that people are just told this by the. I think that it's more ingrained than even most people let us know. I think a lot of people hide their politics these days because it is so partisan.
I fully agree with that, and I think every election we've had over the last several cycles has borne that out. One thing I would add to that, though, Jordan, I think on a couple of the biggest issues of the day, border security and then this, late-term abortion discussion that's been happening over the last few weeks, I actually think if you drill down on substance with very specifics with the American people, I think strong border security and a common-sense approach and then reasonable restrictions on viable living infants, I actually think there's wide agreement among the base. The question is, Jordan, and you know this better than I do, but when a voter goes into the booth, are they voting from an informed position on substance, or are they voting on a partisan label? And I think too often it's the latter, because I think if you drill down on substance, I think there's actually quite a bit of consensus among the American people on some of these things.
All right, folks, remember, we've got a second half hour coming up on JSEC Yo Live. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, to be part of the second half hour of the broadcast. That's 1-800-684-3110. As always, go to aclj.org. Stay updated on all the issues. Got an update on Asiya Bibi as well. We come back from the break.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
If Russia does not return to full and verifiable compliance with the treaty within this six-month period by verifiably destroying its INF-violating missiles, their launchers, and associated equipment, the treaty will terminate.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Welcome back to the broadcast. If you've already been joining us for the first half hour, the second half hour, we want to, again, drill down on the announcement this morning by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that the U.S. has withdrawn, has begun the withdrawal process on Saturday. So it formally begins the process to withdraw from this treaty on nuclear weapons with Russia. It's the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty signed in 1987. I agree with our statement from Donald on Facebook. He wrote, and once again, President Trump demonstrates how much tougher on Russia he is than previous administrations, and I applaud his actions. I want to remind people, I agree with you, Donald, that the previous administration, that the Obama administration, sent the warning to Russia, but as was very typical of the Obama administration, loved the verbal warnings, never took the solid action. Drew the red line in Syria on chemical weapons. The Assad regime uses chemical weapons, does nothing. Leads from behind. Even, you know, using that kind of terminology. Under the Trump administration, use chemical weapons, Tomahawk missiles get fired at you. Your Air Force, your military bases get destroyed. And that involved Russia as well. So I think there has been a significant shift. I'll go to Skip Ash on this, our senior military analyst. And Skip, this to me underscores what has been an entire shift by the Trump administration to fight back more aggressively through foreign policy, not just through warfare, but through our policy decisions as well, like treaties.
That's exactly right. You know, for many years, the Chinese, for instance, would refer to the United States as a paper tiger, that we would roar but do nothing. We have a president now who says, okay, this is what I'm going to do. If you do X, I will do Y. They do X, they've tested him, he does Y, and now they don't know what to do. Because we have a situation where here's a president who has a backbone, who's willing to stand up and be counted and to do what he says he will do. And that gives them our enemies and our opponents another thing to think about, because when is he going to act? How is he going to act? And is it really in our best interest to be like a, you know, put this red flag in front of the bull? Is the bull going to react? And if he does, what price are we going to pay? So it adds a little bit of uncertainty when they take actions, because this president actually does what he says.
All right, folks, I want to take some of phone calls right off the bat. Let's go to Christine in New York on line one. Christine, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, what will be the legal basis for holding Cuomo and his accomplices criminally liable for promoting, advocating, and consequently instigating infanticide?
All right, so they're talking about the life issue as well. I want to get in, we will get back into this as well. It's come up again because of what happened in Virginia, the governor there doubling down on his statements. But we are looking right now, we've got our team of attorneys, we're looking at state FOIAs, who is behind this decision by New York, and ultimately the policy. I mean, you can imagine the groups like Planned Parenthood. I don't think it's any kind of stretch to say that they were almost certainly involved in drafting these policies and these laws that we're seeing across the country, not just in New York. But you're asking, again, these are elected officials, elected by, Christine, your fellow citizens in New York, and they're not doing it behind closed doors. They're doing it publicly and openly, just like the governor of Virginia discussing decisions there and potential legislation there. They have not been afraid to try to quietly get these provisions through. We're seeing the abortion industry very bold, and that may be because of what's happening in our courts. But I think that they are taking the actions, every action they can take. And again, so yeah, a lot of this comes down to elections. And who you are electing at, not just the Congress, the federal, the state, the Senate, and the House, but who is your state rep? Who's your state senator? Do you even know who that person is? Did you even vote in that election? We will continue to take your phone calls. We come back, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air. An update as well. We come back on Asiya Bibi, the Christian mother in Pakistan, who was found not guilty, ultimately now is in a safe place. We get to that. We come back on JSEC Hill Live.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Folks, I think we've kind of explained for you this decision out of Washington, D.C. and the State Department, the Trump administration, to withdraw from this nuclear treaty with Russia to begin the withdrawal process. We also want to update you, the Virginia governor doubling down on his statements that we believe amount to infanticide. We'll play for you. The governor, Ralph Northam, saying, you know, does not regret his statements. Before we go to that, though, and the life issue, and we will take your calls on that, 1-800-684-3110, because the statements from the Virginia governor, what happened in New York, has thrust the pro-life issues and abortion right back into the center stage of American politics. When you think that maybe, okay, there's not a Supreme Court nominee, so maybe we're not going to see action that way, and then suddenly these state laws come out, and then you start getting state lawmakers like governors on the record either praising very extreme laws like in New York, which have no limits on abortion, no criminal liability for any issues there. And then in Virginia, the proposed legislation where you have a governor going a step further and saying you can deliver a baby, decide whether or not you want to resuscitate it, and then decide if you want to kill it after the baby has been delivered. Before we get to that, let me just update you on Asiya Bibi. She was the Christian mother of five in Pakistan on death row in Pakistan for blasphemy. Remember, she was found not guilty, and there were issues about her being able to freely leave the country. A lot of radicals there, radical population there. The top court there cleared the way for her to leave the country. And so that happened just a couple of days ago. And the reports are now she's joined her family safely in Canada. Again, that report has come from her attorney as well. And so they've worked through that. That's where her family had gone to while she was working on not just seeing in October her decision – and where she ultimately won, but now there's no longer any other legal avenues for extremists to try and punish Asia Bibi or keep her in prison or keep her in Pakistan, and that the high court there did the right thing by clearing the way. So a great update and seeing some kind of that come to a conclusion for the family because again, this was kind of hanging in the balance. We were very careful about discussing it and not discussing her whereabouts or the situation involving the rest of the family. So an important update there. As we just talked about, this doubling down by Virginia's governor on his statement. He was live on radio. Take a listen to what he said about proposed legislation. He's a Democrat governor, Virginia, Ralph Northam, backed by Planned Parenthood. Also, keep in mind, the person making the statement is a pediatric neurosurgeon, so a medical expert. This is what he said on a radio interview.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
About whether or not to kill the child again. So you resuscitate, kill. And this is a decision-making process up to, again, the doctor. This is infanticide, and it's not even what's in the legislation. I mean, he went further than the legislation, which actually says, Than, you wouldn't deliver the baby. We have the sound on the legislation that you could have the abortion procedure. Let's play this. This is the state legislator who is proposing this, that you could actually have the abortion procedure while you're in labor. Take a listen.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester?
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
I understand
make
that.
That
I'm
point.
Asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
So, Than, right there, and before we go to the governor in Virginia doubling down, and he went a step further, even the legislation, because the legislation was saying that you'd have the abortion during labor. He's saying to kill the child after. You deliver it, but and again, he said he doesn't regret the statement, but you hear this from the source. This is the sponsor of the legislation explaining what they believe it will allow.
Well, and Jordan, for people that haven't seen the video, if you've watched the video of Delegate Tran trying to respond to that question, you hear that long sort of pregnant pause, to use a term that maybe is appropriate here. Yeah. She actually grimaces when she's asked that question because she knows there's no way she can answer it truthfully in a way that just is not barbaric. She knows this is wrong. But Jordan, I would just say, I know you're going to move to the governor's comments, but whether you're talking about his comments and his refusal to moderate, or in fact, he'd actually doubled down on them, or Delegate Tran's refusal to do it, Jordan, there's a reason for that. If either of these officials were to take even a slightly more nuanced position that, you know, if the child is born alive, maybe it's not part of abortion procedure or it is, and there's a living human being on the table, if they were to favor any sort of restriction that would say that child would have to be given medical care, the entire reason that they're putting forth this proposal, which is to garner the support of Planned Parenthood and NARAL and the pro-abortion left, Jordan, the support from those groups would disappear. If they put any restrictions into these measures along those lines, the support from those groups would go away. That's why, even though she's standing there trying to answer the question, grimacing, knowing there's no good response she can give, she cannot moderate her position because the very support she's going after would disappear if it did.
I mean, the governor was given a chance to take back his statements. Do you regret the statements? Take a listen, by 21.
Do you regret what you said yesterday or the way you said it?
No, I don't. And you know, Alan, I appreciate the question. I'm a physician. I'm also the governor. But when I'm asked questions, a lot of times it is put in the context of being a physician. Again, realizing, you know, how we approach, how we manage patients, how we offer advice and counseling. So no, I don't have any regrets.
He's a pediatric surgeon. So, I mean, specialist with children and surgery, the governor, and he's supporting infanticide. And then he goes a step further because he answers the question. He could have taken this back, could have said it was, you know, that that the way he said it was wrong or the way he stated it was out of sequence, something. But no, instead, he's turning it on all of us who are pointing out that he's supporting infanticide. Take a listen, Byte 22.
I do find, you know, that how my comments, I did answer that question. I regret that those comments have been mischaracterized. The personal insults toward me, I really find disgusting. So, again, as I said in my comments just earlier, you know, we can agree to disagree, Alan, but let's be civil about it.
I mean, you know, what is disgusting to me, Governor, is that you don't regret your statements, that you support the idea of delivering a child and then it's being resuscitated, so bringing the child back to life and then killing it again, and then having that decision and legislation that isn't even proposed. I mean, he went steps further. We now hear this is from the state representative whose sound we played, who could not was so nervous in her response. Quote, "I wish that I was quicker on my feet, and I wish I was able to be more agile in that moment. And I misspoke, and I really regret that." What exactly did she misspeak to? She says infanticide is not allowed in Virginia, and what would have happened in that moment would be a live birth. So, Than, pushback from her. She's saying it, but the governor saying no.
They're trying to have it both ways, Jordan. I mean, first of all, she can say that the bill was not intended to do that, and yet we've looked at the legal ramifications. We had Abby Sutherland on the show earlier in the week describing how the bill would, in fact, do exactly that. But, Jordan, they just cannot be allowed to have it both ways. This is what the intent of the bill was. This is what would happen. And I would go so far as to say this. On Monday night in the United States Senate, there is going to be a request for unanimous consent on a federal piece of legislation that would say if a child is born alive and they're living on the table, that you must provide medical care to that child. So, look, at least if you're a member of the United States Senate, you're going to have to try. You're going to have to decide which side of this you stand on. You can't be on both sides of it. Jordan, I almost guarantee you there will be a member of the United States Senate that comes down and objects to that bill and firmly stands on the side of infanticide. But look, these officials, no longer can they have it both ways. On Monday night, if the entire United States Senate is actually against infanticide, it will become federally outlawed in the United States. But I predict someone will object.
Thinking about that, the idea that they would stand up against legislation to prevent infanticide and you're going to see people rushing to stand to be the ones who oppose legislation to prevent states from, because if the state lawmakers are so misguided, and they shouldn't be writing the laws. I mean, they shouldn't be representing anybody, because what they are writing would allow for abortions at that moment or open the door to infanticide, as the governor of Virginia says he doesn't regret saying. And now they've crisscrossed themselves. But the truth is, again, it's because there are no restrictions here. When you have no restrictions, it's up to, again, your interpretation. And that means you could have the birth, you could have the abortion. That's how the laws are written. We'll be back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now, other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're taking your phone calls, final segment of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. As we've explained, you know, abortion has been thrust back into the national debate. Once again, this issue, we stand for life at the ACLJ. We fight it on all these different fronts, you know, the pro-life speech, the procedures, legislation as well. But what we're seeing, and you've got to fight all of those out in court. We have a criminal law case right now where someone has a criminal record because of pro-life speech in Iowa. They're convicted of a misdemeanor, say of a criminal record, for sidewalk counseling using a vague statute in Iowa. We're doing that case. You know, we support pro-life legislation, pro-life judicial nominees, and those who respect, again, the idea that life begins at conception. That being said, what is we're seeing from the pro-abortion left is fairly unprecedented, Than. We're starting to see legislation moving through, removing it. So it happened in New York. In Virginia, it's being proposed that removes restrictions on all restrictions on abortion, and by doing so, has confused even its own supporters. Where you have the governor of Virginia saying you would deliver a child if you wanted to have an abortion at the end of the pregnancy, even during birth, and during labor, you would deliver the child and then kill it. That's infanticide, and he's not stepping back. He says he doesn't regret his statement and thinks that the people calling him out for it are disgusting. Not what he said. The sponsor. And the delegate who sponsored this legislation, she's saying her statement was inaccurate. So what they have done is opened the door to no rules, no laws on how we treat life.
Jordan, what I think they've done is abdicated the responsibility for actually drafting some of these laws over to the radical pro-abortion left. And in many cases, I think you're correct. I think that they don't know what's in them. Now, in some cases, I think plenty of these elected officials would be more than happy to stand behind the radical stuff that is in here. But on at least some instances, there have been examples where elected officials, when they're educated by groups like the ACLJ about what the actual impact of these laws or proposed pieces of legislation would do, Jordan, they change their mind. And one example was in Virginia, where a very pro-abortion delegate, her name is Dawn Adams, she's from Richmond, when she was actually educated on what the impact of this would be, that it would essentially allow infanticide and would allow some of these gruesome, barbaric procedures, Jordan, she withdrew her name from that piece of legislation. Now, again, her position on life is not one I support. I do not think she is friendly to life. I think her positions are should not be, frankly, in public policy. But when she was educated by groups like the ACLJ about just how barbaric it was, she removed her name as a co-sponsor from that legislation. That's why we're so invested in education, because even on this issue, where there are going to be a lot of people that disagree with us, when they know the legal impact and the real lives that are going to be on the table and not provided medical care, Jordan, in some cases, they have to change their mind.
Yeah, I mean, so we're actually we're seeing that. So we're seeing state delegates change their mind, even co-sponsors, because they didn't even understand what they were sponsoring. I want to go to the phones. Ruth calling from Pennsylvania on line one. Ruth, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick question. If the baby is born alive and breathing, when does it become a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, it should be on immediate. I mean, immediately. Now, Than, what that may need to be explained to people, because it's probably shocking. Is what is it born alive legislation being proposed in Congress? The fact that it's necessary, even to that issue, if you're born here, you're a U.S. citizen, you know, immediately, that's how that's been interpreted. And when there's questions about that, the left freaks out. When you question whether or not just being born here, regardless of whether your parents are here legally or not, that you're a U.S. citizen, if you even question rethinking that, they freak out. But yet, they still believe you could have an abortion at some moment. They can't really define it. After birth, or they won't even put in the protections for a born alive child who survives an abortion procedure.
Yeah, once again, Jordan, I think it's one of these examples of the pro-abortion left trying to have their cake and eat it too, trying to have it both ways. And Andy Economo on the broadcast a couple of days ago explained some of the challenges of prosecuting a crime like this. I really do think it would be a crime in this instance, but if you take away all the penalties, you take away the ability to prosecute it, it becomes very difficult. What the legislation that Senator Sass has put forward, which is the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, Jordan, he's going to ask again for unanimous consent on the Senate floor on Monday night. So in theory, unless a senator comes down, this would pass the United States Senate, although I do think one would object. Jordan, the concept is extraordinarily simple. It says that if a child is delivered, whether it's from a failed abortion or through a natural delivery, and is showing signs of life, so you have a living, breathing human being on the table, it will become a requirement that medical care is provided and that legal rights attach on the federal level. Jordan, it's almost unthinkable that we even have to have this conversation, that there's a living, breathing human being on the table, and we have to have a debate on either a federal level or a state level whether or not that is a person with rights attaching to it. But on Monday night, that's the debate that's going to be on the floor of the United States Senate. And I predict to you, I hope I'm wrong on this. I sincerely hope I have miscalculated the United States Senate, but I think there will be a senator, probably multiple of them, Jordan, probably multiple of them who are running for the Democrat nomination that will come down and will object even on that fundamental level.
Yeah, and you see, Thad, I mean, as Reba writes on Facebook, is it show that there's no moderate position left among the Democrat Party? I mean, they may try to sound moderate, they may come from purple states like Virginia, but it is far left when it comes to abortion policies. Now, we did see the co-sponsor, who is pro-abortion, says she made a mistake by not reading through and understanding the ramifications of repealing all laws and rules surrounding abortion. So there may be some hope at local levels when you educate that. But again, all they're saying there is that they wouldn't have supported infanticide. I mean, that's not that great of a statement to be making.
Yeah, Jordan, the truth is when it comes to the abortion movement in the United States, there is no moderate position. And I'll just give you two very quick examples. First of all, if you talk about restrictions about informed consent and giving a woman information about what she is going to be experiencing, the reason they oppose that, Jordan, you would think if they were pro-choice, right, you'd be about being for information so that a woman could make a choice. They're against that because when a woman is given information, by and large, that leads to a decision for life. So they oppose that information. They cannot be pro-choice if they're against that. Jordan, the other thing I think is maybe even more fundamental. The reason they oppose any limit, any line, even if it's after delivery, a living human being on the table, it's a very simple reason. It's because if they concede that there is a line, then they have to defend where that line should be. So the abortion industry has chosen to be against any line being drawn. They're against any limits, any restrictions, because they know they cannot defend it once they concede that a line has to be drawn somewhere.
All right, folks, again, a lot of updates there. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. As we finish out the broadcast today, again, a lot of updates for you at ACLJ.org. We're watching for a case out of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court make a decision on whether or not to grant a stay out of pro-life legislation. So we're watching that. It could come today. So stay up to speed with us on social media. Facebook.com at ACLJ, Jay Sekulow, Jordan Sekulow on Twitter. You can follow us all, Thad Bennett's on Twitter as well. We're following that. The Supreme Court, it has not happened while we're on the air live. So we'll get that out on social media if anything occurs at the Supreme Court. We appreciate all of you listening this week. And again, there's going to be a special. We're actually doing the Jay Sekulow Band is doing a special Super Bowl halftime broadcast. So check that out on Sunday. During the halftime, head over to Facebook. It'll be on the Jay Sekulow page. And the Jay Sekulow Band is doing a special halftime performance for you at the halftime of the Super Bowl. Enjoy your weekend. Stay up to speed with us at ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you next time.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.